Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What does it feel like in Hong Kong right now?
I would say for the last month, it has been a very challenging month in a number of different dimensions.
Dr. Karen Greppen teaches public health at the University of Hong Kong and studies healthcare systems. And right now, her city is in a massive COVID wave, something that Hong Kong had managed to avoid for months, even while the US and other parts of the world were battered by Omicron and Delta. Even Hong Kong's previous waves were pretty light. In January, Hong Kong was averaging fewer than 100 cases a day. By the start of this month, that had climbed to 50,000. Hong Kong now has one of the highest COVID death rates in the world.
It's been incredibly frightening for many people to finally realize that everybody is getting a disease that we have been fearing for so long. Mm. And so, the estimates now suggest that maybe upwards of half of the city has already become infected. And that really happened in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
With so many people infected and needing care, Hong Kong's hospitals are struggling.
And so this has translated into, pictures in the newspapers every day of bodies literally piling up on the roads, bodies piling up inside of the treatment centers in the hospital wards themselves.
Greppen says people are terrified about what might come next, mass testing followed by lockdowns, as the government tries to get case levels down to zero.
We've seen, for example, panic buying, people basically buying up everything they can in the grocery stores, because we know that in the mainland, when they do these testing schemes, they've almost always been associated with prolonged lockdowns. And then the second thing that's happening as a result is really a lot of people leaving the city. Expats or people who have dual passports, there's been a massive exodus from the city in the last couple of weeks. And so in some ways, it feels really sad as well, because the city is literally dying in some ways.
That feels in so many ways what it was like here in New York City in, March and April of 2020. And yet here we are 2 years later.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, a lot of people, I think, would draw parallels between what we're seeing now here to early March, April 2020, in particular cities like New York. But as you said, we had 2 full years to prepare for this. 2 full years to have put in place things that would have not made the situation as severe as it is. And yet we did not see those things happening.
Today on the show, how Hong Kong failed to prepare for a COVID crisis. The government's zero COVID policy got enviable results, but inadvertently set the stage for disaster. What will it take to change course? I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick with us.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day.
That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.
I wonder if you could explain Hong Kong's zero COVID policy to people who aren't familiar with it.
There's lots of terms out there, so you could call this an elimination strategy, or zero COVID, or more recently, in fact, the government has adopted the terminology that has become more prevalent in the mainland, which is a dynamic zero COVID. And the basic idea is that we aren't always necessarily striving to have zero cases at all times, but once there are cases, that you move quickly to quickly identify and isolate all known cases so that you can then get cases back down to zero. This has been very successful in the mainland and very successful here in Hong Kong for basically 2 years.
Early on, you all had, 8 months without a single COVID case? Is that right? That's an astonishing figure.
Yeah. So from about May of last year through the end of December, we literally had no COVID. Although the measures were still in place, you know, we had some restrictions, for example, in terms of, you know, how many people can gather in restaurants and, you know, mask wearing is compulsory. We pretty much had what I would call very normal lives. And COVID just was something that people didn't think about all that much because we had no COVID and there was almost no risk of getting COVID in the city.
That must have been sort of freeing at a time when it felt like the rest of the world was in, you know, varying degrees of lockdown.
Yeah, I mean, we were getting this question a lot, you know, sort of how long can people try to sustain zero COVID and do people really think it could last? And the truth is, because we had such a normal lives and in relation to what we were seeing happening in the rest of the world, a lot of people were very supportive of continuing with this policy because it was so great and things that we didn't have to worry about. It wasn't until the fall, really, that we started to see, for example, countries put in place measures to vaccinate children. So a lot of people were also very supportive of the measures, including myself, just so that we would be able to buy the time so that children could get vaccinated before we would open up the border and allow the virus in as well.
At the time, did you think that the policy was successful?
I would say that, you know, in the short run, we were successful, but it was very obvious that we were very vulnerable to any sort of breaches of the defenses, because part of this, you know, success of zero COVID meant that we also became very complacent.
Yeah, where do you think things started to go wrong from a public health perspective?
I actually think the vaccination program really started to go wrong almost immediately. We started vaccinating our seniors in February of last year, and then it moved down to other adults in March and April. But it became very obvious that the seniors were not taking up the vaccines in large numbers, even as early as April. There was immediately, once the program started to roll out, every single day in the newspapers, stories of people who had passed away or had these adverse events, and then they would report on their vaccination status. Inevitably, they were unrelated, but it didn't stop it from becoming an important news item.
The government's vaccination campaign also gave people a choice. Get the vaccine made by Pfizer and BioNTech, or get the Chinese vaccine, Sinovac. Residents were confused about which one to get and whether to be scared of side effects.
What the government ended up doing was sort of suggesting that everyone should speak to their doctor before getting vaccinated. And I think in many ways, this was actually one of the biggest mistakes that they made. And this was happening at a time where we were starting to move out of our last wave, our fourth wave of the epidemic. And so we were getting into a phase in which there was no COVID. You know, people would go and speak to their doctors, and doctors were saying, well, there's no risk of COVID, so, you know, any potential risk from the vaccine maybe is not worth it.
I think one of the things that is hard to get your head around if you are trying to understand what is happening in a different part of the world is the low rate of seniors who are vaccinated. Why not target the elderly like a lot of other places did?
I would say, I mean, they were targeted. So if you actually look at the, you know, the guidance that was issued by our scientific committee on vaccination, it was very clear that people living in residential care homes, seniors, people with comorbidities were the priority. But we created this whole idea, and it was really reinforced, I think, a lot by the medical community, that you had to be healthy in order to get vaccinated. And so the older you are, the more comorbidities you have. We actually ended up in a situation in which those were the people who were least likely to get vaccinated.
As of March 15th, less than 20% of Hong Kong residents over 80 had gotten three doses of a COVID vaccine. And only about half the same population had even had one dose. Right now, Hong Kong is averaging more than 280 deaths a day. Switching strategies to mitigating COVID even just a little bit earlier might have saved lives.
Even a month ago, because of, for example, this focus on zero COVID and this very successful element of the zero COVID strategy, which is to put everybody who has it in an institution, in a hospital, we needed to realize that we could not do that, right? We could not continue to put everyone, even people with mild and asymptomatic COVID symptoms, in a facility. We literally clogged our hospital early on in this wave with mild and asymptomatic patients, people who did not need to be there. And then when the severe cases came, we weren't able to process them. We weren't able to actually get them into beds. And as a result, lots of people died.
When we come back, how to turn away from the zero COVID model.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket. So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
Hong Kong is not the only place to embrace a zero COVID approach. Australia, New Zealand, Vietnam, and Singapore all followed that playbook, but changed paths as it proved unsustainable.
Many of the former zero COVID countries actually did put together plans, roadmaps for this exit from zero COVID into some other model that includes living with the virus. It does require having measures in place so that, you know, you can keep the numbers of cases at a manageable level. It means planning for these surges in your hospital capacity, and we saw Singapore doing this. It means putting together real plans on how you would provide information and resources for people who are isolating with COVID at home, one, so they recover safely and then don't need to then go into the hospital. But two, also that you're providing them with information and advice in order to reduce transmission within the homes. All of these things should have been part of some sort of plan to enable us to prepare in the case that COVID were to get into Hong Kong in order for us to be able to cope and manage.
I saw you speak on this panel where you mentioned that Singapore did sort of psychological preparation of its population as well.
Yeah. You know, COVID, especially for those of us who've lived in a zero COVID environment, is still very scary to us, right? We have not experienced COVID. We don't really know people who've had COVID that we've seen, right? Because we've lived in an environment in which no one's had it. We've basically taught ourselves to fear it. Although we have very poor vaccination rates amongst our senior, we have very high rates of vaccination amongst the general public. For those people, COVID is very likely to be a bad cold or be asymptomatic, right? But we haven't seen that yet here in Hong Kong, this idea of trying to convince people that COVID is something that you can live with, because in the long term, they want us to go back to not living with COVID again. And so, yeah, Singapore spent a lot of time trying to dispel these myths around COVID, to try to encourage people to prepare for this, but at the same time, you know, not panic should they get exposed or infected with the virus.
Singapore has recently been hit with a similar wave of Omicron infections, but the country's hospital systems seem to be weathering it. 92% of the country has had two COVID shots, according to the health ministry, and that includes 94% of people over 80. It seems like a big issue that you have highlighted is trust. Trust in the government, trust in public health messaging. I'm looking at other places where they have successfully pivoted away from a zero COVID model to something else, New Zealand being another example. And there, trust was high. What would it take to kind of win back trust in the government and the public health authorities in Hong Kong?
I think in the short run, it would be very challenging. It's just this last 2 months has further undermined trust in the government response, mainly because one day they'll say one thing, for example, that they were not going to do a lockdown. And then the next day they're saying, well, actually, maybe we are going to do a lockdown. They were so sure they were going to implement this compulsory universal testing scheme in March that they actually canceled online school for children. And now we're not even sure when it will happen. I do think, you know, they could be thinking about how in the longer run that this, you know, could be built up. But I do think it will be very challenging at this point, given how poor the response to this current wave has been.
How much do you think the record high death rate that you all are seeing right now figures into that?
I mean, it's hard not to. It's been very unsettling here to see this happening. And this, of course, is also is affecting thousands and thousands of families who've now lost loved ones. And I think there is a feeling that, you know, some of these deaths could have been prevented.
Omicron cases are also climbing in mainland China, with outbreaks in two-thirds of the country's provinces. Many cities have ordered lockdowns. I asked Dr. Greppen if anyone there is rethinking or outwardly questioning the government's zero COVID policy.
Even in the mainland, I don't think anyone thinks that this is something that's going to last forever. And so I do think even internally, they're thinking through now, perhaps a bit more seriously, in particular, given what they've just observed here in Hong Kong about, you know, what is the right way forward to transition. I don't know if it means it will accelerate the transition away from zero COVID, but I definitely think it will mean that they will have to take a lot more lessons on board. So even yesterday, for example, we saw mainland authorities updating the rules around the need to hospitalize all cases in mainland, I think in preparation for what could end up being significant waves in some of these localities across the mainland now. And I think that's a direct lesson from Hong Kong in that, you know, you really have to, as much as you want to be able to maintain the zero COVID approach, you do need to prioritize in the short run protection of the healthcare resources so that you can use them as efficiently as possible to save lives.
It must be incredibly frustrating to be sitting there watching all of this happen in the city where you live and have the professional expertise to say, we could change the way we do this.
It was very frustrating, let's say, a month or two ago when it was very obvious what was about to happen and not seeing any change in policy at all. And unfortunately, I think this has now cost us thousands of lives, and that's very sad. I hope, you know, some of the lessons from this wave will be integrated into that. Plus, the fact now that, you know, half the city has had COVID, most of them, you know, mild and asymptomatic, and we've lost anywhere between, I'd say, 5,000 and 10,000 lives. You know, what is the value of returning to zero COVID from a public health perspective? At this point, it's pretty low.
Dr. Karen Greppen, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Dr. Karen Greppen is an associate professor at the School of Public Health at the University of Hong Kong. And that is it for the show today. TBD is produced by Ethan Brooks. We're edited by Tori Bosch. Alicia Montgomery is the executive producer for Slate Podcasts. TBD is part of the larger What Next family, and it's also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. I want to recommend that you go back and listen to Wednesday's episode of What Next. Mary Harris talks with journalist Kevin Rothrock about what it's like to run an independent media site covering Russia. We will be back on Sunday with another episode. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thank you for listening.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
And it would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.